I do own a horse now, so that's weird. And which is extra weird because I grew up in Akron, Ohio, and if anybody knows anything about Akron, Ohio, you would know that horses in Akron, Ohio do not go together. So the entire experience has been almost surreal when your kid decides that being a projectile off a horse seems like a good plan. And there's no panic that you can experience as a parent watching your child become a projectile off of a horse. So I have all of that going for me. So we are, cool. Look at all these faces. Hi, faces. Are we good? Okay. We're going to talk about this whole concept, and we're going to build a little bit on what Craig was talking about. And I think it's important to note for about, give or take, 100 years or so, for the last 200 years, we have essentially been doing the same thing over and over again. Need a person? Hire a person. Need a person? Hire a person. Need a person. For infinity. Like, this is an infinity loop that we've been in. 200 some odd years. And the interesting thing about this trajectory of need a person, hire a person is 200 years ago, it was super local. Like, you could go into somebody's shop and be like, oh, I saw your little help wanted sign. I would love to be an apprentice at your blacksmith shop. Or you could have something like this. See, these things never work for me. It's amazing, which is why I have this up here. You have this. Okay, this cracked me up when I found this. So first of all, this is a recruitment advertising artifact. Okay? 200 some odd years ago, a lad of 14, I was like, whoa, wait a minute, whoa. What are we doing with this 14-year-old? And then I started to realize, like, that's probably mid-career back then, right? So this guy's like 45 in today's modern society. But you look at this and you're like, oh, we're already starting to become a little less local. Inquire of the printer. We're starting to put a little distance between that comfortable feeling, because what happened 200 years ago was that you'd go have a conversation with the wig maker's mom in church about maybe my kid could come work for you, right? So when you think about this local, this personal, this engaging, this relationship that we had between talent and what you wouldn't call it an employer brand from a blacksmith shop back in the day, but it was really personal, it was really tied together, and it was really local. So how did it become from this whole personal experience to, oh dear God, we don't want to talk to any of you? And I think that it happened maybe for one or two reasons. One of them is, like, nobody wants to have an awkward conversation in church with your mom, right? I've never met anybody that's like, oh, yeah, no, we would never, ever, ever want to hire you. You would never really work in my wig maker's shop. So that's not going to happen, right? So that might be one of the reasons. And the other reason I come to think about is maybe it wasn't awkward conversations. Maybe it was born out of ego, right? So maybe it was born out of this whole concept of, like, well, we are the ones with the job. Like, as the gold makes the rules. Like, we have the gold, we have the job, we're going to make the rules. You need the job anyway. But whatever happened between, you know, that moment of talking to somebody in church to where we are today has become frightfully adversarial. What we've created today is a boxing match. We've got a war. We need you guys, talent, we need all the talent out there to give me your social security number and your last 5 salaries, and we might call you back. And we're not going to give you a lot of information on the upfront. Like, essentially what I tell people is, like, we have got to stop giving an inch and taking a mile. Okay? If we are ever going to get where we need to go, because this is where we live today. I mean, does everybody feel this experience? Like, when you've looked for a job, does it feel like a boxing match? It feels adversarial, and it feels needlessly adversarial. And when I think about, like, where we've gone in the last maybe 20 or 30 years, this is what we got, right? We even call it war, right? We're talking about the war for talent. And when you think about what happened in the war for talent, that was started, I believe, in the 90s. I minored in history, so I love looking at how all this transpired. When you look at this, you look at the 90s, and what did the 90s give us, right? Well, it gave us job boards. And then when we had job boards and that fax was whirring, right? And then we were like, oh crap, we can't store all these resumes in Lotus Notes. That doesn't work. So we're going to need somewhere to store that. And then we got an ATS. And then we got the ATS and we started going, okay, we can't respond to all these people. This is really a lot of stuff. So we created this war. And when you think about it from talent's point of view, they just want a nice paycheck and something meaningful to do. They have no interest in war, right? So it's time for us to set that aside, because what also brought us in the 90s, right, with the job boards and the ATSs and all this good stuff, like it brought us more, but it also brought stuff for them. It created a huge double-edged sword. So now we had more access to candidates than ever before. We could get applications, and we could get eyeballs, and we could get people from all across the globe. We were interconnected, but so were they. So we had all this opportunity, but we forgot that they also had all this opportunity, right? So we could generate all this interest, but it made it easier for them to jump ship because they could see what else was out there. Now, don't get me wrong. I do not think the solution here is less technology, right? I just talked about how technology has ruined everything. I don't believe that for one second, because you just saw what Craig showed you. You just saw how technology can start building relationships and bringing people together. Where I think that we've failed in the last 20 or 30 years in this war is looking internally. It's not the technology. We have to start spending time focusing on our opponent. Who are they? What makes them tick? What is their experience? And how can we empathize with them? So all of you, get out your phones, like you don't already have them out. Get out your phones. Open up a search right now. Go. I'm so bossy. And I want you to open up a Google search, and I want you to search for your company and a job that you know is important to your company. And when you find it, click on it. And when you click on it, start reading the job description. And when you zone out, raise your hand. Yes, you raised your hand, yes, right? So I surveyed recruiters and employer brand people last year. 74% of the recruiters that I talked to said they hate, used the word hate, their job descriptions. Hate. And this is about the place that we work and we love. So imagine what your audience feels about this. Here's the reality, everybody. 90% of people working today are open to a new position. They're literally open. They're considering this as an opportunity. They're looking at open positions. And they're wildly disengaged at work. Two-thirds. Gallup. Okay, so think about this. They're super open, right? They're not really stoked about what they're currently doing. So where are they? Well, the fact of the matter is that 25% of people would rather do all of their Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve than apply to a job. And 19% of people would rather wait in line literally all day at the DMV than go through our process. They are all this guy. They simply can't even, right? They are open. They are ripe for the picking. But we have created so much friction and so much of a just not enjoyable experience that they're not even participating. So I've got to remind everybody, and if you hear one thing that I say today, it is not them. They are open, and they are not excited where they are. It's our opportunity to create a great experience. It is 100% about the experience. Because last time, so when you guys applied for a job last time, not that anybody's done that any recently, although I do some secret shopping, where's the friction? You see it all over the place. So I don't know about you guys, but I have a hard time remembering stuff. So whenever I go to a site and they ask me for a username and password, I have no freaking idea what that is. I have no idea. And then when I get there and I enter in the wrong thing, then there's this endless loop of hell and I leave, right? So I can't remember stuff. That's friction point number one. I can't even get in there to raise my hand to learn more because it's hard, right? And then everybody's had this experience where, like, you upload your resume and then you have to paste it all in again. They hate that, right? That's horrible friction. And then black holes. But even this is just the apply process, all right? Think about the earlier friction at the top of that funnel, where I just learned that you might be a great place to work. But then I go to your career site, or I see something about you on social, or I see something about you on Glassdoor, and it really sounds like you guys are making unicorns. Everybody's sunshine and roses. Everything's the most exciting. We're changing the world. Seriously, sometimes you're just slinging burgers. And that's okay, right? There is this level of authenticity that we need to start bringing to that messaging, because you have to acknowledge that the brand that you work for right now actually has to pay you to show up. Same with my brand. I love what I do. My job is my favorite job I've ever had. But they still have to pay me. I'm not going to do it for free. So as much of world-changing and wonderful activities that I might be doing and innovating and this, that, and the other, it's still a job. So we've got to start working on communicating really authentically at that top of the funnel, because that is another point of friction. If I can't figure out what you actually do or what I might actually do for you, it's more friction. I can't get there. So what if instead I want you guys to think about something? We've talked about this frictiony thing. But what if instead we could create an experience people love, or at least don't hate as much, right? So what if you guys remember the first time you bought an iPhone or something similar, right? You remember this experience. That was like 10 years ago, and you're like, I still think I have the box, right? The box was so pretty. Like, I get the box, I'm like, I should make a planter out of this box. Like, and I open the box, and I'm like, oh, what could I put in this box? Like, this is an experience that people love. They open it up, and it's beautiful, and it's clean, and it's clear, and you pick it up, and then you turn it on, and all the magic starts, and you swipe things, and you type things, and it walks you through this whole thing, and you're like, oh, I don't need alarm clocks anymore. I have this thing. So all of this is an example of an experience people love, because it's clean. It's simple, it's engaging, it guides you, it walks you through it, it eliminates questions, and it's completely friction-free. So the fun thing about this is that we are literally all shoppers. Like, we all bought iPhones and Samsungs and Google Pixels and all that other good stuff. We buy things all the time. And when you go to a retail experience and it's awesome, what happens? You go back over and over again. Right, that's a thing, right? So we're like, I had this great experience, I'm gonna go back there. We are all shoppers. So when we start in that design thinking that Craig was talking about, put on your shopper hat. Figure out, gosh, when I'm in a shopping experience, like, does anybody love Amazon Now? Like, oh my God. I wish that they had an Amazon right now, so like I could say, I would like Doritos right now, and they would bring me Doritos. Wouldn't that be awesome? I'm sure that'll happen. There might be a drone coming flying in here one day with Doritos for me. Boop. I would be thrilled. So when you think about that Amazon Now experience, you know what you're doing. It's very simple. If you abandon your cart, what do? They drive you back to that cart, right? So they want you to make that purchase when you think about your experiences. And it's not just that experience on your career site. It's the entire continuum. It's not the experience on the Amazon site. It's that entire continuum. So think about Alexa. Does anybody use an Alexa? Yeah? See, I am banned from Alexa. My husband's a security engineer. So we don't have one of those. I mean, we have one. We just occasionally plug it in to listen to the box of cats. Have you tried the box of cats skill? It's awesome. Anyway, so Alexa actually has 6 career-based skills already. So here's my 411 on this. 4 Alexa skills right now are designed to help people find jobs. Different niche kind of professions. There's already a career advisor on Alexa. and you can get interview tips on Alexa. Why does this exist? Right? You might like, how did we get here? Well, we got here because this is our audience right now. Our audience wants it right now. Like, I want my Amazon, I want my Doritos right now. I want to learn about your employer brand right now. I want to find my dream job right now. They want it right now because if you remember, they're super over it. And when they're ready to make a change, they want that now. So when I talk about how much they're over it, this devastated me when I did this. I typed in the job search is killing me, and I got 3.6 million job search results. Or search results. Like, there are 3.6 million pieces of content that involve the job search is killing me. So whatever you do, don't click on those unless you're down for a little bit of really funny memes or Reddit. But this is what they're thinking, right? This proves that they're over it. And then if you start typing in the job search or job searches, oh my God, you guys. Okay, other than Island Caretaker, which who's not on board with that? This is not a happy audience. But what if it didn't have to be that way? What if they could really understand who you are, what you do, and what makes you tick as an employer? For real. Not the aspirational stuff, right? I've talked about this in the past. You guys remember the campaign, Vegas is for Families? Yeah? Super aspirational. And fun fact about that one, it actually worked gangbusters. I think they saw a 30% uptick in visitors to the city from that campaign, but because they weren't gambling, or because people were like, don't show my child that billboard, they kind of killed it. So again, when you think about this from the candidate's point of view, the top two barriers for candidates right now in terms of deciding to apply for a job are one, I have no idea what you are or what you do, and two, I have no idea what the job is. So when you think about creating content for your employer brand, your entire job is about creating transparent communications that is going to break down those two barriers. What am I going to do all day? And again, it's not going to be sunshine and roses, right? So if you aspire to work for Tesla, right, you're going to be like, I want to work for Tesla. I want to change the world. Do you know what changing the world actually means? Like, do you know how difficult it is to be on your A game every stinking day of every minute of every day? That's what it means to change the world. You have to be in it every minute of every day. Elon Musk may call you on the floor randomly, and you better bring it. That's what changing the world. So until you can communicate to your audience what that actually means in the day-to-day world and educate them up front, and you know what happens when you educate them up front? You eliminate some really sweet garbage out in the back of the ATS, right? Because then people can screen themselves in and out. So what's fascinating as we've watched, like historically, like we went through really personal to a war for talent to where I think we are today, is we are in the midst of a talent revolution. So I'm just gonna tell you guys, we lost. We did not win this war. They won, right? And you know how we know that they won? Because they're just not, the really, really good ones are just not banging down our door. They're just literally not waking up in the morning and going, oh, I wonder who Smashfly is hiring today. I would love if they did that as the head of their employer brand. But they don't, right? And so even if you think about when you Googled yourself and your job, try it again later without your name in it. See where you show up. Show up at the top, you're doing something great. But you're not going to, because a lot of that real estate is going to be taken up by the job boards and people that you are paying to get that up there. So the talent actually is here, and we are finally at the tipping point where we can do something about this, because I think we all understand that it's not about hiring somebody. Like, we don't need a body. We know that the right person in the right job can be an unfair competitive advantage for our companies. Like, we get that. And when you think about that concept, that we need them as much as they need us, you guys know that, right? We do need them. They need us. Like, we need their skills. They need our money. That's why we've got to get to tangoing. So we can no longer fight. We can no longer box. We got to start learning how to dance, right? This has happened twice in a row. My heel just got stuck in the thing. So you would think I would learn after the first time. We've got to get to the point where it's not a fight. And if we're going to get there, you know what? I hate to tell you, it's going to take a really strong understanding of who this audience is. And you'll probably sit in a lot of sessions in your conference life talking about millennials and boomers and Generation X, but I really believe we're talking about a completely different cohort. We are literally talking about every single person, that 90% that's open, that's wildly disengaged. I like to call them Generation Y. Why you? Why now? Why should I work for you? And let's be clear, they don't ask, why should I work for you? Nobody wants to work for someone. They want to work with you, right? It's got to be about a dance. Working with someone is about dancing. Working for someone is about fighting. So when we think about Generation Y, it's literally this attitudinal shift of, I have a choice. I could work in the gig economy. I could take some years off. I could retire and come back. I could have kids and come back. Why should I work for you? And when you think about Generation Y, those are all the questions. Why you? Why now? Why here? That's what they want to know. So when we are creating that content, we need to focus on this generation and the questions that they're asking, and we need to help them and guide them, because that is the only way for us to eliminate friction. That is the only way for us to get from a fight to a dance. And the best way that we're going to get there is that we're just going to have to let all of our paradigms go. We are going to have to channel our inner Elsa. We're just going to have to sing it from that icy mountaintop. We're going to let it go. We're going to decide that, you know what? I'm not going to make you answer 188 questions on an application on your mobile phone. I'm going to have to let that go. I'm not going to make you, you know, save usernames and passwords. I'm going to let that go. And the amazing thing that's allowing us to let all of this go is the technology. You all have a wild amount of data on the internet about you, right? People know where you've worked, who you work for, your political leanings, what you're proud of, what you're not proud of, who your kids are. All of this stuff is all out there. It's literally out there. And there are solutions that Craig just showed you that you could just pull all that stuff in. So why do we have this process that we are so married to? So I'm just letting you know, you gotta let it go, right? It's time. Because we're never gonna dance if we hold on to those paradigms. We're just gonna keep fighting. And it's not working, isn't it? Is fighting working for any of you? No? Okay. So how do we let it go? Well, I think we're gonna have to learn some new skills, right? So if we're gonna dance, dancing is not comfortable for everyone. And I like to put this in the following, like, if we're gonna learn how to dance, really our new skills are all around marketing. We're gonna have to figure out how to be great marketers. We're gonna have to put on a lot of our shopper hats. We are gonna have to understand that when we are looking at our talent, our universe of talent, like all the people that could potentially be interested in our brand, we're gonna have to look at them the same way marketers look at buyer personas. We're gonna have to figure out what makes this person tick. We're gonna have to understand what they're looking for, what their barriers are. We've gotta walk in their shoes. We have to unbelievably tightly walk in their shoes. We have to understand where they're hanging out, what they're doing, what their passions are. Like Craig's empathy map was brilliant, because that's what we need to do to understand this group and how we have to walk in their shoes. Because again, there is no power position anymore, right? This is not a thing. This is a myth. There is only symbiosis, right? We are only going to work together. We are not gonna fight. So anybody need to hire female software engineers? Yeah, see? This is the thing I hear all the time, like, hey, where are the female software engineers? Okay, well, you need to understand who they are before you understand where they are. So this is one of my favorite. This was a great, I look like an engineer campaign, and ISIS really stood out, and it was really viral. And she's phenomenal, right? So let's think for a minute about who these people are. Like, do they have a job? This is your turn. Okay, good. Thanks, Audra. Salaried usually? Yeah, yeah. Do they jump ship easily? No. Oh, they do. Who said that? Yeah? Good. We should talk. So think about this. What do female software engineers need? What are their barriers? Well, like a lot of us, they need to feel like they're going to fit in. They have to see other people there like them. They have to really understand where their place is in this organization and what they would do for this organization. So I'm going to be really crystal clear. This is an audience that will scrutinize your employer brand content within an inch of its life. All of it to them feels a little fraudulent. They're going to back all this up with conversations in their network. They're going to probably rely pretty heavily on their network. They'll do a little on review sites, probably reading the threes, because they know that the ones and the fives are, you know, either, anyway. They're going to read the threes, and they're going to look, and they're going to nitpick. And what they're going to do is they're going to visit your corporate site. They're going to visit your career site. They're going to visit your Glassdoor, your LinkedIn, your Twitter, your Facebook, your company news, all of your SEC filings. And you know what they're going to look for? Other women doing cool stuff. Okay? So if you don't have, what do you do if you don't have other women doing cool stuff? Well, you should think about changing that with the senior leaders, right? You need to have these conversations because usually when senior leaders, and my senior leader recently did this to me, we need more, you know, female software engineers. And I was like, okay, so how many do we have today? He was like, well, like two. I'm like, okay, so we need to start being really transparent about that because ISIS is gonna be like, well, you don't have any. So how am I going to fit in? Because the last thing ISIS wants to do is write a viral blog post about a bro culture. She does not want that to happen. If you don't have this, and this is what I've recommended to my CEO, I've talked to him, I was like, we need to tell a story around why this is important to us and what we are doing specifically about it and how we make an environment accommodating for female software engineers. So if you don't have a story to tell, you have to tell them what the actual story is. How you got there, why you need to change moving forward, and their place in that story. Because if you can start painting them, help them paint themselves into that story, into that picture, now you're eliminating some barriers, right? But if you're sitting there going, we need to hire all the female software engineers in the world, and you don't have any, and you have no story to tell around that, and they come and they interview, and it's all people that she would not fit in with, you're gonna lose her, and you've wasted a lot of time. So the concept here is that when you understand those personas, that you get incredibly transparent about it. And you start understanding the steps that you're going to need to take to really dance with ISIS. And when I think about dance steps and choreography, I think about what Craig was talking about. It's really about a journey. And when you're learning those steps, every single stage in that candidate journey, from the moment that she gets a LinkedIn invite from one of your recruiters about a position, you need to think about what she's doing, thinking, and feeling when she receives that. In that moment that she's made aware of you as an employer, what is she doing? What's she gonna do next? Well, she's probably gonna go talk to her network, right? She's gonna do some Googling, talked about reading those SEC filings. But what is she thinking about? What are the questions that she has? And so when you're sending these communications, be mindful of those questions that she's already going to be asking. Will I fit in? What do you do? Why is it impactful? Where is my place in this company? Because those are the communications that's going to drive her from that awareness stage into potentially even considering you and doing research about you. And when you understand how she's feeling about all of these things, you can start to uncover those content opportunities, those opportunities to reach her and convert her from one stage to the next. So when you think about, like, this whole thing is what we talk about, the messy candidate journey. Like, she's interacting with a billion things in this experience. And it's not linear. Like, I know people like to show you the funnel. It's not like that. That's our paradigm, right? So they become interested, and then they consider it, and then they decide, and they apply, and we hire them. Okay? No. So what happens here is then they might actually, I've advocated for changing this graphic over and over again, but nobody listens to me. And they don't hit your career site first. But you get the sense that it is not linear. This is not something that she's, well, I might visit this, and then I'm going to go here, and then I'm going to go here, and then I'm going to go here. She's evaluating it. It is absolutely a journey. It's definitely on a non-linear path at any given time. So I'm going to tell you a story. I want you guys to imagine for 1 second that I am your purple squirrel at your company. I'm the one that you have to have. Right? I'm your person. And you reach out to me, maybe on LinkedIn. And it's not right for me. So I typically don't respond, sorry. But something might have captured my interest enough to say, oh, that's something interesting. And the best LinkedIn in mails to me usually involves something that's valuable to me, right? That I care about. Hard, right? So it's hard because you've got to do that whole giving before you take kind of thing, right? So give me something valuable, and if you give me something valuable, I'm much more likely to respond. But 97% of the time, I delete emails, so that's fun fact. Everybody else deleter? Big deleter. Okay, so you send me this email, and something sparks, but I don't respond. And so I might start checking you out on Twitter or LinkedIn, where you sent me that. I might read some of your company news, and I may follow you on Twitter, let's say. And over the course of our relationship together, I'm very, very solidly exercising my thumb muscles, scrolling past a lot of content, right? A lot of scrolling, do a lot of scrolling. And then someday I come across a piece of content that tells me something that is very poignant about being a great recruitment marketer. Maybe it's a piece of research. Maybe it's a new tactic. Maybe it's something valuable that I hadn't thought about. Maybe it's some sort of statistic that I hadn't found. Oh, now you're interesting to me, right? So I'm going to do a little bit more digging. I might go to your career site after I've done more digging. So I go to the career site, and you don't have anything for me because there's not a lot of recruitment marketing employer brand jobs in the world. So I just leave my information. And then you start emailing me probably once or twice, once every other month, maybe once a quarter, and I delete a lot of those, 97% I'm going to delete those. But it's one time you send me something that is just boom, like this groundbreaking thing that's a tip for me to be better at my job. Oh, well, that's interesting. So I'm going to let that stay in my inbox for a little bit, and I'm going to see your brand over and over again passing by my body. Like, how many times do you look at your inbox every day? Like 600,000? So I'm going to see your brand 600,000 times a day. And then my boss does something that makes me mad, and I'm having a bad day. And I think of you. And I go home and I ask my Alexa, I secretly plug it in. And I say, Alexa, ask bad day who's hiring. And it gives me a note that, gives me a response. It's like, oh, Tracy Disney's hiring a recruitment marketing professional. I was like, ooh. And then Alexa says, do you want to apply? I'm like, yeah. And then Alexa says, application sent. That is our frictionless future. That is where we spend all of our time educating talent about what our brand is and creating simple experiences to convert them. Simple. Easy to raise my hand. Easy to follow you. Easy to submit my credentials. Frictionless. It feels personal to me. It feels like you care about me. And it can be super automated. I may have opted in through a chatbot. And then your chatbot went and got all that information about me. And if you've got some personalized content on your career site, that's awesome. But you guys, we have to do more. The sun does not rise and set on our career sites. It's more than that. They visit over 12 sources before they get to your career site. They make 57% of the decision before they get to your career site. And then when they get there, they only come back 35% of the time. So this epic investment we're making in career sites is important, but it's not our only investment. We need to spend all of our time bringing them back to this experience, drawing them in with content that matters to them, drawing them in with content that reduces those barriers. One of the simplest ways we can draw people in is all the employees that live in your buildings right now. All of these people have social followings of 200 to 500 people. They're all connected to people like them. They have friends. There's going to be a little bit of a diversity of thought going on in there. But what we've done at Smashfly is we use our employees as our amplification channel. We use our employees as a media source. We give them all of our branded content and say, here, send this out. And after we did that for 1 year, that became our number one source of applicants and hires. Because our employees and your employees are all engaged in the story. And you know for a fact that people believe people before they'll ever believe a brand. So if it's on your career site, there's going to be a modicum of side-eye going on. But if it comes from your employees, in their voice, with your message, it's a win every single time. Because what you end up doing is aligning their why with your why. When you get your employees talking about your brand, when you get them understanding what makes you tick, breaking down those barriers is simple because people believe them. And it allows them to put this into their own voice and connect each other. That's all we want to do. It's so ready, and I'm so ready, and I'm so excited for this opportunity that we can create amazing experiences. Right? It goes back to that entire concept of us needing each other. Why do we create longer applications to cut down on serial applies? When we could simply create content that helps people understand that they may or may not be a fit at this company. We need to look at every point of friction that a candidate experiences in their journey to our employment and our retention of them as an opportunity to reduce barriers and friction by understanding what we can bring, not plugging in more technology, but really studying our opponent. What we've created today is straight up this, right? All your information, we need it all. We want you to jump through all these absurd hoops, and that's what we need because we, again, think we're in this power position. But this is where we're heading, you guys. We are heading to the point where we are going to build relationships with talent by fostering open and transparent communications throughout their journey that is dialed into what they actually need to move to the next stage. And that's all I have today. I'm open for questions. And I love to dance. No, I'm too old. Yes. Yes. Intel and REI. Intel and REI. Both of them have on their career site, but again, you have to get to their career site to get this. So I would advocate to Intel, I think you're in the room, and I think I've told Alin this, hi, is that we have to start creating more content around that concept. But they have, I know REI has on one of their pages, like, this is our executive leadership in female, and this is our goal, and this is how we want to get there. So just publishing that information. So check out REI and Intel. And we've got an Intel person over here, so if you want to ask her about it. Yeah?
How did you go about encouraging
people to be ambassadors and getting that, like, on the ground? So we have a lot of buy-in from our CEO. That is our number one thing. We are also probably not the ideal use case. We're not as big of a company as some of you, right? So we're literally talking a couple hundred people. But really what we did is we gamified it. We used a tool called Social Toaster. We're looking at Clearview Social as well. These are great tools. And what you end up doing is then you just email and in one click. So the selling point is this is really easy. It's your opportunity to help the company. And everybody at Smashfly is a recruitment marketer. That's actually on everybody's job description. Like, you will help promote this company. So that's something that we work toward at our company, but we had a lot of buy-in from the CEO. We gamified it, we made it easy, and we just kind of made it exciting. Like, you could enter for a gift card once a month, and yeah. I don't have a pulse on the gamification right now, but I can definitely do a little digging. Well, we're a startup, so we have this great lawyer. His name is Marty. He's actually one of the more fun people in our company, which is really kind of interesting. Like, the lawyer's the fun guy. He plays in the company band. Anyway, that's an aside. But Marty, really, it was again that partnership with our leadership. But our marketing team does this too, right? So there's no policies in place that said you cannot be on social media. We have some guidelines that we share with our talent to let them know that this is good use and this is bad use, and please be careful and please be mindful. But we found that it's just giving them the authority, and it goes back to the whole topic of the talk is trust, right? We literally trust our employees to be responsible with our employer brand. Yes, so EEOC, but that's, if you think about the requirements around compliance, it's probably this much of our application process, right? It's this much. So we've just kind of stripped it down. Like, we have a couple customers, and I have a couple customers that have taken their application and taken it from an hour to 10, right? And what happened, right? They got better talent in their databases because they were mindful of that frictionless experience. So what you do is you focus on the stuff that you have to have, and then you literally poke holes in everything else. Like, I legally have to do this. Everything else is on the table. Let's debate and talk about the value of this, and let's talk about if this particular field or this particular page or this particular experience is really worth the drop-off rate that we'll experience for top talent. And when you start framing it in that mind's eye, the hiring manager's like, oh no, I really want the good ones. Then great, let's focus on this. So first of all, you and I are gonna be fast friends. We're both sweary. And so here's what I would say. There has to be medium, right? So back in 2005, I launched a MySpace campaign for recruiting. I'm really old. So same thing, like, you see this, oh, I want to get involved in this neat new thing, right? So typically what we would recommend, or what I would recommend to the brand, is you've got to define middle, and you've got to let them know what their guardrails are, right? And if you focus it in the positive, like, we are empowering you, we are trusting you to do these things, and we want you to focus on those things and not those things, I think that's where it gets to be. It becomes about policy, if it has to become about policy.
You're welcome.